Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of our consciousness. And I think there's nothing more influential than our interactions with other beings, other dimensions, other levels of reality. And I'm on the phone tonight interviewing my friend James Carman, who just produced and directed an amazing film, an overview of the UFO situation called The Hidden Hand. And hopefully we'll be showing this film at Contact in the Desert, that huge UFO conference coming August 8th to the 11th. And Joshua Tree, you go to my website, newrealities.com, to find out more information. There's a free ticket giveaway. Anyway, James, thanks for being on the show tonight.
Thanks for having me, Alan. How are you doing?
I'm good. I did want to talk to you, well, not just about your movie, but about the whole situation. The whole, you know, you did a great movie. It was a really good overview of alien abductions, government cover-up, you know, the whole history of UFO sightings, and yet nothing has changed. I mean, there seems to be no, I mean, not just your movie, but there's a lot of information out there, and nothing seems to affect the mainstream. What do you make of it? What's going to, like, make some movement on a bigger scale?
Well, I think it is affecting the mainstream. I think it's happening in a subtler way. Like, my film has been on Netflix since the 18th of May, and it's been in the popular selection since then. And, I mean, Netflix is huge, right? I mean, a lot of people watch it. So if it's still popular, that means a lot of people are watching it. So they're taking it seriously somehow. So I think there is a slow kind of opening, and I don't think it's just, you know, ufology is totally being ignored, but it's taking time.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it happens on the fringes and works towards the center, and, you know, maybe it is the mainstream, the kind of formalized, that's always the last to tell the truth about what's happening. I think there are small movements in the field, but what do you think? I mean, I know we've talked to Richard Dolan. Richard Dolan's a big part of your movie. He talks about AD after disclosure. But what do you think it would take to bring this other level of reality, or this other, the realization that there are ETs? What do you think?
Well, I think it'd have to be something very big, because, you know, if you think of the people who have a vested interest in keeping it secret, then there's no, and they have a lot of control in the secret government. They have some control in the intelligence agencies, also in the media, I would argue. And it's not in their vested interest for it to become public, because if it becomes public, it's a big pain in the ass for them, because, one, perhaps they've been doing criminal activities, unconstitutional activities. People are going to be looking into the whole veil of secrecy that's been going on since 1947. And, you know, people aren't going to want to divulge information, so it would be up to us, the citizens, to scratch beneath the surface, and I think that would take quite a bit of time. So I think basically it's going to be some other event that's going to happen. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's something to throw everything off balance from how it is now, and then I think there'll be an opening.
There'll be an opening, but you're right. I mean, but it's so deeply covered up within our society. I mean, it's been so covered over. It's like cemented over, the secrecy and the deception and the lies and the denial. I mean, did you see Bill Clinton the other day on television saying that he didn't think there was anything at Area 51 or at Roswell? Did you see that clip?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, do you think someone like that will publicly bring it to the attention to start to plant seeds of possibility? Like, he's denying it, but, like, you know, denial is the first part of the truth.
Well, he's talking about it, and you have to remember that he asked about it when he came into the White House, and he was briefed on it, and he was briefed on it by one of the Rockefellers, and he was taken to his ranch in Wyoming, and they actually made a little booklet out of it in terms of, like, what they came up with, and I think that's quite interesting. It's something that a lot of people don't know about.
What do you mean? What do you mean they made a book about it?
There was a small, not right after where they met, but then later on, kind of talking about some of the highlights of what they found out. And, I mean, maybe they left some things out. I don't know. But there was a little booklet that was made in regards to their meeting and talking about UFO. And it was basically Bill Clinton was schooled.
Wait, you're saying Bill Clinton and Lawrence Rockefeller had a book that was made of their discussion?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. I mean, but have you seen that booklet?
No, I haven't. I mean, I don't know how widely disseminated it is, but I know that one was made.
Well, that's incredible because I mean, he publicly has denied it.
He's denied, not that he has denied maybe knowing anything about it, but he hasn't denied that he had interest in it, and he hasn't denied that meeting took place in Wyoming. I think that was in 1994. And so, I mean, I think it's quite interesting that was documented.
Right. So, I mean, it seems like they can't really keep covering it up the way they have been because, but it seems like a slow leak. Everyone's waiting for, like, a big event, but I think it's something that will take years of development and kind of, like, slowly, an awareness until, like, some generation comes along and says, oh, yeah, we knew that all along. So that seems like that's part of that strategy almost.
Well, you know, I just drove here this evening, and our driver was talking about how they have flying cars now and that by 2020 it will be a lot more common to have flying cars. So when you start having, like, flying cars everywhere, then if there's actually a real UFO, it's going to stand out a lot less than it does now. You know what I mean? Then it'll be like, people won't even say it's a UFO. It'll be just like, oh, it's something else. You know, it's a new model. It's a Mercedes, whatever. You know, it's like, it's a BMW, you know, or it's like, it's so, you know, then it can be even more confusing, you know, to kind of know what's going on, because the sky will be black with Mercedes flying cars, you know, and then if there's a UFO in there, you know, who's going to know?
But were you satisfied with your film in a way that, like, upon completing it, you really covered all the bases? And did you feel like finally... Yeah, someone had encapsulated the whole situation?
Well, I'm very proud of my film, and I'm very happy I did it. I think it really does a great job. I think it doesn't, you know, the UFO field, it's so vast. There's so much you can go into, and there's certain things I would like to go into more, and I think I will, and one of the things is, like, the positive contact. I'm very interested in exploring that more. And I'm also very interested in, I had a woman call me from British Columbia yesterday, and she was so lovely and so sweet. And she told me about this event that she had that totally changed her life, you know?
Yeah, tell us about that. What did she say, if you don't mind?
Well, I can't remember because she wrote it to me a couple weeks ago, and then she called me. But it was like she was taken up into this other dimension, and she was on a table, but it's very loving, and she couldn't really see the being. She could only see the hands and part of the silhouettes of their heads, but she had this incredible feeling of love, and when she was brought back, it totally changed her perception of the world. It was like she stopped judging people. She could see behind situations. She could know why people were the way they were, why things are the way they were, and she was very grounded in being just present and being in the moment and in being in a state of ecstasy. And, you know, she said that this lasted for years and now it's kind of diminished. And I was telling her that she should, you know, reconnect and make a new connection. And I'm sure that it's possible. And she was a little bit, didn't want to do that. And I encouraged her to do it because I think it's important, for her development, because she lost some of the glow of that experience, and I think it can be recaptured. And I think, you know, that's part of the reason she had the experience, so she could see what she was capable of.
Well, I mean, I think it's great, and I know there are positive contacts, but I did just talk to David Jacob last week for like an hour and a half. Uh-huh. You know, he has a whole side that's just like the ETs are bad, they're taking over. I mean, it's and that's all he sees. And yet, you know, he's a nice guy. He's doing his own investigation. But people don't see. He doesn't see a bigger picture. And I think, you know, there must be a positive aspect to it. Like this woman had this experience. But why don't people like David Jacob and others? I mean, I like David. He's a great guy. But why doesn't he see the big picture here? I mean, what's going on? You've talked to a lot of these people.
Well, what I've noticed with hypnotherapists is like they seem to draw or attract the people to them that they resonate with in some level. And so it's kind of really interesting. Some therapists they attract radically different kinds of patients. And I think that has more to do with them than the patients. And so the patients are coming to the people that can kind of help them or that resonate with what they've experienced best. And so, you know, maybe that's David's function, is to help those people who have had these very traumatic experiences. And maybe people like Dolores Cannon and
Yvonne Smith, I think, and of course John Mack had a very some positive things to say, and actually, I should also interview Randy Nickerson. Do you know about Randy? He's the one that was working with Bud and John. He's just making a movie about those kids in South Africa that saw that UFO land.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
There's a whole movie about that experience coming out. You know, I think the experiences seem to be as varied as, the people. But the one thing that is sort of common is that there's an initial shock about these beings being part of our reality. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I think it's definitely an ontological shock. But I think the people who have had this, you know, had these experiences all of their life, then the shock isn't as much because they're used to it. But a lot of them, the shock is still there because the memories are washed, they're taken away, they're manipulated. And so it can still seem fresh and bizarre every time because you don't remember that you've been interacting with them all your life. It's just like when you're there, then you have this kind of vague, this familiarity or this old shit feeling like, oh no, what's happening? It's happening again.
It's happening again, but yet there's a familiar in the experience, and I think we both had them. There's in the actual enactment, it's like, oh yeah, it's happening again, but it's like, oh yeah, it's like sort of coming home to, like, family you haven't seen in a while, or, like, the familiarity kind of overwhelms the shocking part of us. It's as if another part of the brain or personality kind of comes into play. That's my experience. I mean, I think you've had much more traumatic experiences, perhaps. But do you still think overall it was good, positive? I mean,
I've had some more neutral experiences and some negative experiences. I've never had these kind of like amazing enlightening experiences, but I'm very interested in that because I think, there's a lot of potential there, and there's a lot of potential into kind of what humanity inherently has as a potential and kind of how we could change this environment. The woman I was speaking with the other day from British Columbia, we were kind of talking about secrecy, and even if these beings are positive, why would they want to be so secretive? I mean, she didn't even see what kind of beings they were, and she had no access to see them again. But her feeling was that experience changed her so much that her vibration changes the world and the people around her. And so that's kind of one of the ways that the positive ETs are working through changing this world. They're changing the vibrations of the people they come into contact with, and they're letting them change the world. It's not incumbent upon them to do anything in terms of saving us, rather than to just interject some of their positive energy into us and then see if it can work as a catalyst.
But that brings us to a really, I think, major point that I think people really don't understand, and I'm sort of working and trying to understand myself, that it's not just there are these beings. It's like they bring up that there's more to us as human beings. So it's like the shift in these positive contacts are making us more of who we really are, more human, more, let's say, spiritual, more expanded. It's not like we're just meeting beings from another planet or whatever you want to call it. We're meeting parts of ourselves that have been disconnected from who we really are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense in the sense that, we're all interconnected, we're all one, and it does help us grow. I mean, even if you had negative experiences and you're still alive and you've kind of integrated that into your life, in a way, you have a broader perspective to work with. And I think especially the interdimensional interaction is quite interesting because it gets us out of this kind of 3D model of reality, this Newtonian model of reality, and then people start opening up and they become aware that, my God, oh, all this is right here now, this dimension, this dimension, this dimension, this, and that's available to us to interact with. And so I think that's huge.
Well, yeah, I think it's so much more complex in a way than just thinking that people are coming from another planet visiting us taking genetic samples. I think actually there's something so intricate and so involved in the evolutionary process. It doesn't seem like just a simple thing. It seems like there's levels and levels of awareness. And it's one of the reasons I think that they're not public is because I think we don't have the capacity, in a sense. And, Linda Moulton Howe said that. We don't have the capacity to really understand what the whole thing is about. It's like your dog looking at you at the computer. Do they know what you're really doing? I mean, I think we're in the same situation in terms of a vaster cosmos of consciousness
and we have yet to really mature to the level of an expansion where we can start to think of things beyond duality of good and bad. I mean, that's such a primitive way of just looking at, you know, what's taking place. What do you say?
No, I agree with you. I mean, well, the Buddha, he talks about that. He talks about that being like a conditioned part of this reality, you know, duality. And in the whole thing of Buddhism is to get beyond that. But I think that, you know, if you look at the history of ufology, like in the airships in the 1890s, you know, they were like, looked like blimps in people. There were humans that were on them, and they would sit down, set the ships down. There would be men there. Sometimes they would speak other human languages. They would work on them and fix them and tinker on them. And so that's vastly different than what we're experiencing now. And if you look at the 1940s, you know, you have the saucer shapes, or there's other shapes, kind of like discus shapes that we're seeing. But then you talked about the whole contactee movement. They were meeting people from Mars and Venus, and so it kind of expanded a little bit. And then, you know, in the 60s, we started having abduction experiences and those kind of more scientific interaction, you know, having to do with sperm and ova and genetics. And it seems like now it's also, while that's still going on, that other things are happening. It's morphing with our consciousness to other levels. So in a way, it's mimicking our growth. So I think that you're right, that there is something there that's kind of profounder than we can understand. But as we grow, it kind of grows and mirrors our growth.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And it's like we're growing into the phenomena in a way. We're maturing to embrace it. And that's in a way why you might, it could seem like actual disclosure is a disclosure about who we are, a disclosure about ourselves in the context of a bigger, more complex universe. I mean, that's in a sense the disclosure. It really goes hand in hand with a parallel interdimensional awareness of ourselves.
Well, I love that analogy because I think it's very true. You know, we're growing into the phenomenon. As we grow, it expands with us. It's kind of like, you know, a form-fitting a mattress. You know, as we move and grow, the mattress kind of envelopes us around us.
Yeah, I mean, we think, you know, we're still living in a very Earth-centered world, you know. We in a way, we think the cosmos is out there, the universe is out there. We think, you know, this island is the center of all creation, and we are in outer space. You know, we are in a sense aliens. We're creatures from another dimension ourselves. We've taken Earth bodies, but we're in a sense who we are is not really of the Earth. This is what the Aborigines have said. You know, we're caretakers of the Earth, but we're not of the Earth. And I think that's the sort of brainwashing we have to overcome. Is this idea that we're stuck, or we're the center, or some ego-centered, Earth-centered, geo-centered reality about the world. And, you know, I think we have to redefine ourselves on a much bigger level.
I agree. And it's kind of interesting to take what you're talking about and view it in the idea of the fall of man. You know, when we came from a finer, higher vibration, and we fell into this earth into this earth plane, into these bodies, and into a reincarnative process where we couldn't get out. And maybe this is a process of where we're finally getting out, or finding ways to get out of being caught in this
Wait,
earth
so what
process.
Is the prophecy? What are you saying? Like, you feel like the prophecy is like?
No, I mean, we talk of the fall of man. You know, there's many, in ancient texts, many texts speak about this. And they talk about how, you know, we were once more august spiritual beings. And we came and we were in this because of original sin. At least that's how the Christians view it. But that we came into these coarser bodies, and it's kind of a punishment in a way. But it's also that if we're reincarnating into the cycle of life and death on this earth plane, it's kind of a prison in a way. And so maybe what's happening is that there's little doorways opening up to where we don't have to stay here anymore.
Yeah, but where are we going to go?
We could go to a dimension that's home, like you were talking about. We could go to a dimension that's less dense, or that, you know, things are happening that are more in accordance with our own values.
Well, that is happening here. I think, you know, I mean, I just talking to this guy says we're really moving into this Aquarian age. I mean, we're in it. I mean, that doesn't really mean anything except that the reorientation to a new worldview is about, you know, this transformation that you said. So that you're talking about. I don't think we have to go anywhere. I think this is an amazing place. It's a very nice planet. Good planets are hard to find, and I think if we could change the consciousness that's already here. And I think that's really what the UFO situation is about. It's about changing the consciousness, because they're not going to become a part. There's no room for that level of awareness to be part of a dense vibration, whether
right.
they're good, bad, or indifferent. There's no space in people's minds for this reality.
Well, I agree. I mean, heaven on earth is, you know, it's here now. We have to just live it experience it. But still, I think perhaps there is a mechanism there. There is a seed of truth to that story, describing the fall of man. And this could be the denouement, where maybe there are more doors, more gateways opened up in our growing of our potential. And so we could stay here, but we wouldn't have to.
Well, but where is there to go? I mean, we don't have to, but well, I think
no,
we're
there's everywhere
connected.
To go. There's everywhere to go. They just found a sun with 50 inhabitable planets around it. There's, if you're thinking, like, we're right now, we're according to string theory, there's, you know, 11 dimensions here right now interacting. We just open that perception, and we're there in that other dimension. We don't have to. But, you know, that has to happen first before you can, you know, go there. That perception has to open up.
What I'm saying is I don't think the problem is the place. It's the people who run the place here. It's the people who put the laws and who create the separation, who, you know, restrict the freedom and our capacity to know and have free energy and all the things that we're actually meant to have. I think that's the problem.
No, I know that, but we don't know how high that goes. I mean, if we're intended to reincarnate here always on this planet is a mechanism kind of that we're not allowed to live somewhere else, that is a kind of a prison mechanism. And I'm just saying, I'm not saying it's true, but I'm saying perhaps that is opening up now. Maybe we're going to be able to incarnate in different places.
Yeah, I think so, but I think it's about conscious. It's not so much where you are. It's about it's about the consciousness. I mean, I think, so what I'm saying is we in our consciousness have to vibrate at a different level in order to inhabit worlds that are at different levels. In a way, I'm just saying this is...
No, you're totally correct. I mean, you know, because that's the whole thing of Castaneda's enterprise, right, was opening him up enough. He was so dense, he was so stupid that, you know, that's why they... You know, the women, they didn't have to take all the drugs. They didn't have to do all those strange rituals, but they didn't have to jump off of a cliff. But,
right.
You know, but the thing is like, once you're there, once you're that open, then you can go anywhere. I mean, that's what they did. They left this plane, right? They had one ritual, and they all sat as a group in a geometric configuration, and they all just left because they knew where to go. They knew how to go.
Right, right. And I agree. We have that mechanism, and it's about vibrating at the rate that allows the brain to unlock itself so we can just... start to dissolve, but you know it's the culture that has conspired to limit the realities that we consider possible. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, so, no, totally. I mean, we're totally kept down, you know, and dumbed down. You know, we're just beat over the head with sports, this sport, that sport, this sport, this sport. You know, and then you know so many other things, you know, TV. Pornography,
yeah,
stuff that's keeping us from thinking about what's actually going on.
I mean, Robert Lawlor, who I took this sacred geometry workshop this week, and he said even the whole idea of mathematics and arithmetic and counting as separate from its true spiritual value is a way of disconnecting us to think that numbers have to do with counting, when they really have to do with qualities of being and consciousness. One, the number one has to do with the unity. It's not a number, it's an essence. And two has to do with the duality, the reflection of the one reflecting upon itself is the two. And out of the one and the two comes the three, which is creation, and when you have the three, you have things, and that, he says, is the first real number. And he says, you know, but we have to remember that these are not measurements. They're levels of consciousness or the qualities of consciousness itself. And part of forgetting that or ignoring that has separated us from the real value of the world, you know?
Mm.
So, I mean, I thought that was really brilliant. It really clicked in for me, this whole, and that we're taught numbers even when we're so young, and that conditioning to think that numbers are just quantity separates us from our own spirit right there. You know,
right, exactly. So that's when I see someone's telephone number, I get a vibration off of it, and I can, in a way, it helps me see who that person is just by what I get from their telephone number. I mean, I don't know if you ever get feelings.
No, but
off
birthdays,
of like
I do.
That.
I do that with birthdays a little bit, or even addresses, apartment addresses, or something like that. There's a way of tuning in. I mean, Robert Lawlor went through the whole yuga cycle and the procession of the equinox as it lines up with the yugas and the Mayan calendar, and has said this is part of a huge divine plan that we're in. This giant. A system of Vishnu dreaming the world into existence, and we're coming into the twilight of the Kali Yuga, and it's going to last another 300 years. But then when we get through that, we come into a new golden age. And he says, as we descend from into the twilight, into the darkness, the things that
the material world, which seems to have the power, will start to give way to the subtler feelings of human consciousness. So the feeling sense will override, in a sense, away the tactile, the five senses, and that's sort of where we're coming into. It's sort of what we're talking about, super consciousness. That's sort of another aspect of the super conscious reality, is that the subtleties of feeling are being awakened, even though he says Robert Lowe says, you know, it's going to be pretty intense because most people want to stay in that old reality, even though it's not working, you know? So, I don't know.
It sounds like it would be a blast to live in a place like that. You know, it'd be so fine. It would be where, you know, it's like a lot more emotive thinking, feeling, but these very fine gradations. But I could imagine it being a wonderful.
Well, it's happening. You know.
Yeah.
You know, we know vibrational healers that can, you know. If they, you know, like Masha, she just knocks people out with one, like, you know, sort of thought projection remedy, you know, it's just like goes into the field. And it's like, you know, so I think there's a subgroup of the culture that's developing a sensitivity to this new type of awareness.
Yeah.
And it's already happening. You're already living in that world. That's what I'm saying to you.
Right. No, I agree with that. But I mean, I would welcome it to really be happening in a larger kind of movement. You know, the way Robert Lala was talking about it.
Yeah. Well, talking about it also, though, the world is pretty negative, and they really kind of like, you know, that the old world really has to die for the new world to be reborn. You know, he's really saying, you know, he's like, it's not all fun and games. But I mean, if you shift, you know, there's a way of getting off the wheel, the karmic wheel, or whatever you want to call it, and transcending the time and the space that we're in for something else to happen. I think it seems like everything has not been already thought of. I think, I think reality is unfolding moment by moment.
Yeah, and I mean, there's always creation. It's always new. I mean, people who say there's nothing new, they're crazy. There's so much creation. There's so much innovation that's happening. I think that's what's inspiring.
Yeah, there's a lot of innovation and creation, but it's also happening in every minute, every moment it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that goes brings us back to, I think, the whole idea of these ETs, because I think why they're coming here is because they somehow, it's my theory, that they somehow feel human beings are actually, in a sense, more evolved. We're tapped into that creative principle. And we have the ability to create art and song, and I think some of those ET races are coming here because they've forgotten how to feel.
Yeah, I think perhaps some of the more negative atrophied races, like the grace. But I think part of the reason they're coming here is because our origins are the same as theirs. I mean, a lot of our genetics have ET origin. And I think over the different stages of the creation of man by ETs, that there were mixing of different kind of genetics. And so in a way, they think they're related to us. And I mean, I can see why they would want to watch us and follow us, but I think I could also see why they would be concerned about us in terms of if the way we've just went into Iraq and bombed the shit out of them, the way we've done it in Afghanistan, Vietnam, wherever, World War II, Russia, you know, to that whole kind of lifestyle and culture, which we're very much developing in terms of weaponizing space, you know, I think any other sentient civilization would be concerned that we would bring that same kind of mentality out into the galaxy and just like, you know, have one shoot up after another.
Well, Robert Lawler did talk about that. He talked about the Archon.
Right.
Do you know about that, the Archon consciousness?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he said that's really what has dominated human consciousness, this Archon warlike, dictatorial influence has taken us over and has sort of redirected the natural human being. And he says that's really what's gone wrong here. I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, I think he's right. I mean, I think that I feel that we have kind of like a deeper place inside of us that isn't ruled by war and anarchy and hierarchy. And it would be nice if we could tap into that in a deeper, more profound way. If you think of the whole idea of samadhi in being in those very deep bliss states, I think then if you start to get a taste of that, then there's no way you can relate to war and aggression. It just would be very foreign thought for you.
Right. But where do you think the Archons, or some people call them the Anunnaki, or that Jehovah was one of the, I mean, where does that fit in with the current E.T. Gray, even draconian experiments? I mean, how do those fit together? I haven't quite put them
different
world.
I think one of the biggest mysteries is what happened to them, the Anunnaki, and I think one is they created us, but it seems like they let us alone, just kind of like as an experiment to see what happened. And maybe they're monitoring us. I think some of these other, the reptilians, I think were created by them also, and that was, I think they're used kind of to steer us in a way to keep from our perspective a negative agenda going on Earth. And the Greys, I think, are, you know, I think in a way they're interested in souls. They're interested in our souls. They're interested in soul energy, soul technology. And I think, you know, maybe something happened with them. And they might not even be real sentient biological beings. They might be a lot more artificial and are looking for a way to develop a vessel that will hold a soul so that they can participate in some of that. That kind of goes back to what you talked about, them being interested in us in terms of art, creation, song, which they don't really have.
Yeah, so, I think that makes sense. I think they are interested in creating a vessel that will hold a soul, but it's like that's the part, in a sense, they can't manufacture. They can create the genetics, they can create the bodies, they can create the ships moving time through time and space, but I think the one thing all these ET races cannot create is the soul. And I think that's just all on an even playing field, in a way, you know?
Well, I think also, there. I think it's if you, in a cosmic sense, if you misuse power like they're doing, and then that will come back to them. I think that they won't be successful in their endeavor. I think it will come back to them, you know, in terms of their power over us.
Well, is it their power over us, or is it a way almost like a tribute to, I mean, of course they control us in that sense by, you know, coming in and taking the genetics, but
in a way, it's a tribute to humans and who we really are. It's like they're honoring us in some strange way, you know? I mean...
Right. Well, I mean... I don't know. It is. You could say it's a tribute to us, but it's also kind of very. It's using us as a resource, as a food source.
Well, not for food.
It's very unsavory. It's in. It's a food source in the sense that the soul is used for energy. You know.
That hasn't been. I don't know about that, but maybe. Maybe you're right. Maybe that is what. But if that's true, then people wouldn't be left with a sort of positive spiritual awareness at the end of these experiences. I mean, even though it's traumatic, mostly it's transformative in a positive way.
Right. Well, besides kind of like you were talking about the Archon energy. And besides, like the Anunnaki and those kind of very, like, more material entities that have been here and that do interact with us, there's also, in my opinion, what I call these even bigger meta entities. They're these huge, vast entities that are. They're in. They are in different dimensions, different realms, but they're using our dimension, our physicality, for food, a food source, just the vibration of it. And so I think that those have influence over the Anunnaki and this whole kind of Archon people that are actually interacting with the Earth. I don't think they interact with it. With the Earth directly, but if you get into some of the negative satanic and Luciferian kind of religions, there is a very kind of direct interaction with those kind of beings.
Right, but I think that's a low level, and I think, if we raise our vibration to just feeling love and goodness and positive energy, we can't necessarily be pulled down in those directions.
No, I agree with you, but you were just talking about the Archon energy, and I was thinking, and I agree that, like, when you have children playing in the ocean and those peals of laughter, that kind of just resonate and make our lives richer and their lives richer. I think there's also on the other side of things that there's beings that also profit from that and can also gain sustenance from that positive, that really upbeat, that those loving feelings you're talking about. So
you're saying they can gain positive influence from that? Is that what you're saying?
I think there's like the way we derive our sustenance from minerals, from plants, from animals. I think on other levels that there are beings that derive sustenance from our energies, our what we produce emotionally, just the energy of our beings. And so if we're aligned with more with love, then those are the kind of meta beings that we're going to be aligning with that will also be gaining sustenance from us. But if we're in we're in a war situation and we're killing people and we're bloodthirsty and we're slaving, then there on the other side, there'll be like those darker meta energies that are deriving sustenance from us.
Right. So it all comes down to us then, and where do we want to live? And
exactly. But you can see why then there's an influence into the Earth cultural system, Earth governmental system of negativity, because some of those beings, they have a vested interest in what goes on the Earth in terms of their sustenance.
Yeah, no, I think so, and I think the Archons, or whoever you want to say, the Illuminati, they do run the world, they do control the economy, they do pick presidents, they do control the world politics. It's sort of like their game, But in a way, they can have that if we have ourselves and control of our own power of awareness. You know, in a way, it doesn't matter what the outside world is doing. You could be in prison and have a free mind. And I think, in a way, in some ways, maybe you're saying this is like a prison planet. And but it's also beautiful and expanded, and it could be whatever we want it to be.
I agree. And you know, also, you know, they are few and we are many. And just if we grow in numbers and in certitude in our spiritual growth and love and harmony, then we will be a lot. We won't be so controlled so easily. And I think, you know, that's happening.
Yeah, I think it is happening, but I think we're in a huge change, and you know, ETs could be a part of that or not. But you know, I think eventually, at some point, the hidden hand, as you call your film, is going to be revealed. I mean, don't you think so?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's levels and levels and levels. I mean, we've talked about a lot of levels tonight, you know. So, but. Yes, I mean, throughout, you know, I you know, it depends. Like, if you talk about, you know, Christopher Columbus, he was sent to the New World, but they already knew about the New World. He didn't discover it. They knew about it, but it wasn't...
Who are they that knew?
Well, it was monks, and it was the royalty. You know, it was...
Henry Sinclair knew about it. I mean,
they weren't sent over until there was an economic structure for it to really flourish. And,
right.
And I think that was coordinated.
Well, was it coordinated, or was it just a shift in consciousness that, you know, I mean, Columbus coincides with the Renaissance, which coincides with a new level of thinking and new ways of looking at art and consciousness and humanity. And so I think that it's not, in a way, coordinated as it is, like astrological influences impacting people to think differently, you know.
Right. But my point is that Columbus was a part of some secret societies. You were talking about who rules the world now, that also ruled the world then. They had some knowledge that they knew that there were these other lands, but there was a certain preparation for when it would be right to explore it, and also in terms of economics, be able to exploit it.
Mm. So you think the same thing is true now with this ET?
Yeah, very much so. If we talk about that in history, that's something you could make that historical argument, but you would have to really support it quite well, and some people have. But if you look at what's going on now, it's like the outer space is like the Navy. It's like the high seas, and we're going out on the high seas. There are people who have information about different parts of the high seas, you know, different planets, different galaxies, different parts of our galaxy, you know, different places that may be habitable, different planets where maybe there is intelligent life right now. There's definitely structures that show that there has been intelligent life there. So, you know, that's all not common knowledge, but it's people know about it. And then once we develop to where we're economically able to capitalize on that and really move out in a bigger way, then the news will be, oh, he discovered this on Mars, or he discovered that planet, and you know, that's the way it'll be written in history. But there was some foreknowledge. That's all I'm arguing.
No, I agree with that. But I think what makes the ET or the outer space different is that we're not at the advantage we were, or Western mind was, in like, you know, becoming a colonial imperialistic power. We're at a disadvantage of greater forces, unless unless we think that the archons are working through those that are controlling the economics and they're branching out to other parts of the universe to expand their own sort of domination, and then
right.
it's the same thing. But I think, well, I don't know. I think the game is over, in a sense, for some of these civilizations, some of these old forms that have been around. Well, they've probably been around, well, certainly for the last 2,000 years with the church, but even before that, in like these hierarchical societies of Babylon and Egypt, you know, there's been that kind of control and, you know, manipulation of consciousness that's been gone on. And somehow I think we're coming to a breaking point where I think we might just end up being free and start to realize who we really are. At least that's my hope, you know?
Well, yeah, it's, but when that happens, like you said, we don't have to go anywhere, you know, it's all
yeah.
happening right here now.
Yeah.
It's in every moment.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, did you do this film as a way of planting a seed of possibility, The Hidden Hand, James Carmen, The Hidden Hand, it's sort of like a seed that you hope will grow, isn't it?
It's just like a door. I mean, it's like, let's say you have a red silk cushion, right? And you have like a little chocolate bonbon on it, and you just extend it out, and then you just hope someone eats that bonbon, and it kind of, it's so amazing that it kind of like gives them a taste of a new world and a new reality, and then they can kind of do with it what they will.
Right. So, yeah, you're planting seeds of possibilities in people's minds about, yeah, what to be, the revelation. And because I think if you consider new realities, then a part of your brain expands, you know. I think it grows to become more and has a kind of byproduct effect of having more creative thoughts, of thinking about different ideas in other areas. So I think that's part of what I'm trying to do also, is expand people's reality. But it's like, you know, sometimes I meet people who don't buy any of this, and I just feel the density of their thoughts. Can you do that sometimes? Can you feel that too?
Yeah, totally. But you know, that's not to diminish them. Sometimes
no.
They're kind of perfect how they're doing that. Like some people that are totally left-brained. You know, they're lawyers or patent agents or whatever. It's you can see kind of how they're very well adjusted right here and on this earth, and whereas we're not so much sometimes because we've had taste of these other places.
Right, but I can feel how dense and restricted. I mean, I think, you know, we're coming into a time where we're really realizing that thoughts are things, and that,
mm-hmm.
that if people have judgment, you can feel, you feel it in your body, and if people are shut down by their narrow worldview, not to judge them, but you just feel it. It's like you feel like there's no way in, and then you meet other people who are really expanded, and it just feels much more comfortable and relaxed. I think, in a way, that's the new culture that's being built, the awareness of these, I would call them thought form realities, and the subtleties of those feelings are actually the foundation of the culture that we're moving into.
Yeah, and then that's also what's interesting about it, is that a side effect of that is transparency, where you kind of know what other people are thinking, and you know what other people have been through, and there's no judgment about that, and it's
right.
There's an acceptance about that, and 'cause we are on another level, we already do that. We just aren't aware of it, but we, you know, you sometimes you just automatically like someone, you don't like someone, or you can kind of get a sense of what their life has been like, and you know, sometimes you know what someone's thinking in a certain situation, and you know, I think that's exciting, where we move into an area of this kind of transparency and just letting the thing, it's okay, whoever, wherever they are.
Well, that's what I call super consciousness. Just what you just said right there, that's really a kind of expanded idea of that. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I mean, there's a story I heard of a guru in India, and there was a lawyer that came and visited him, and you know, he was an old man, very humble, and he told the lawyer to sit down, and you know, everyone was kind of paying homage to this guru, and the lawyer was kind of like, I can't believe that, you know, they're lauding this old man, and you know, he has nothing to show me. He's, you know, I'm an educated man. He's someone who's not educated. But the old man just told him to sit, and then he said, "This is my name." And he said the lawyer's name, and he says, "This is where I was born." And he said where the lawyer was born, and he said, "This is my mother. This is my mother. This is my father." It was the lawyer's father, and then he went on to explain everything that had happened in his life, because he saw it, because he was that clear. He could see, you know, that lawyer. And the lawyer broke down and cried. And then he became his disciple, and he became a famous guru, too. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have that power to be that clear. And I think, you know, when we get all out of the way, get over the programming, get over our own judgments and insecurities and all that, we wake up to being and living in a super conscious reality. And I think that's really the coming of a cosmic consciousness, if you want to call it that. And that's, you know, when that happens, we won't matter if ETs are here or not, because we will have, you know, in a way, conquered time and space, and we will have become the masters of the universe, because we'll have mastered our connection to nature, you know.
And we'll understand them.
Yeah, we'll understand, yeah. But we'll understand that, not even understand, we'll be at harmony with the very thing that we are. You know, I think it was Emerson said, that which you seek is that with which you seek. You know, mm-hmm. That being that you're wanting to become is the being that is already present. And I think ultimately that's our destiny.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm feeling it right now. Thank you for having me on your show.
No, it's good to talk about over these things. So if people want to see your movie, The Hidden Hand, where should they go?
It's hiddenhandthemovie.com. And they can also follow me on Facebook, Hidden Hand the Movie, and in Twitter, it's James Carman, capital T, capital T, capital P. And yeah, I'd love to hear from you, and love to have feedback and interaction with you.
Okay, I'm also trying to get this shown at the Contact in the Desert Joshua Tree UFO conference that's happening August 11th. The 8th to the 11th, you go to my website, newrealities.com. There's also a ticket sweepstakes. If you click on there, you can enter a link to Facebook where you can fill out some forms and possibly win a ticket to the conference. If not, just get a ticket now, and we'll see you there in August. And James, thanks a lot. I'll talk to you. Give me a call tomorrow. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right. See you, Alan. Thanks a lot. Thanks.
Bye.
Talk to you soon. That's James Carman. That's Carman. You can look for his film, which I'm actually associate producer on, The Hidden Hand, hiddenhandthemovie.com, which is a really great overview of the types of influences that are just outside the established system thinking, and that we are really part of a bigger picture here that's been covered up. And it's just phenomenal that
so many people now are in agreement that there's something else going on here than we've been told. And that's what my program, this program, New Realities, is all about. It's about how do we tap in and become the next level of awakened beings that understand a higher level of reality. So thank you for listening tonight. Next week, I will continue with this UFO series that I've been doing and will be doing for the next couple of weeks, all in promotion for the big event, August 8th to the 11th, Contact in the Desert. Be there. Look at my website. Go to contactinthedesert.com. Go to newrealities.com. There's going to be some amazing people there. Eric Von Doniggan, who has not been in this country for a long time. He's the person who started all with his books in the 1970s, Chariot of the Gods, talking about how the ancient gods were really ancient astronauts, aliens from another planet came to Earth and influenced our culture, and we worship these other beings as gods. That he'll be there. Jim Mars will be there. Richard Dolan, who has been on this program many times, who's one of the finest researchers on the topic that I've met, Linda Moulton Howe, who is also brilliant in her understanding of time travel entities and her appearance before the citizens' hearings on UFO disclosure were great. Speaking of which, Stephen Bassett will be there, who is the lobbyist to Washington about UFOs. Stephen Greer, who did his own press conference, disclosure press conference back in 2001, I would say most of the influential people in this field who have some original ideas, who are taking this in a new direction. Travis Walton will be there, who the whole movie Fire in the Sky was written about his experience on board UFO. Anyway, there'll be more programs coming in the next few weeks about all that. Thanks for listening. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and if you want to go to my website, go to newrealities.com. And if you want to reach me, if you have a question or answer, email me at newrealities.com.